Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to season 4, episode 2 of Power T Talk. I'm Daniel. I'm here with Zach. And today we're going to talk more about the defense. So on the episode 1 preview last week, we talked a lot about the offense. We hinted at what we want to see out of Bob Shoop in the defense, but we focused a lot more on the quarterbacks. We focused a lot more on what we need to replace Josh Dobbs. Today, we're kind of going to look at what we need to replace Derek Barnett, what we need to replace the pass rush, but we're going to go through all the positions. So we're going to start out a little review of last year, some of what we talked about last week, reiterating what we think went wrong. We're going to talk about the defensive line. We're going to talk about the linebackers, and then we're going to talk about the secondary. So we're going to go to every level of the defense. And then we're going to talk about the 2017 recruiting class, do a little bit of review on that. We're going to talk about kind of the stars that have emerged in camp and emerged early that we expect to have an impact. And then we're going to look a little more long term, talk about kind of the pro prospects in this class based on height, weight, based on like what we learned about them through the recruiting process, or again, how they're flashing in camp so far. After that, we're going to go to Quick Twitch. We're going to look at, through the recruiting class, we're going to do some Quick Twitch questions about, again, who we expect to be the best long-term, who we expect to be a surprise. And we have a couple fun questions mixed in there. We're not going to do a conference preview this week. We're going to table that for next week. So next week, we're going to come back with our draft of our teams to preview the All-Americans that we expect to be good in college football this year. And then we're going to bust out these conference previews. And then the weekend after that, 2 weekends from today, we're looking at college football. So I'm going to let Zach come in here and just introduce himself and let us know how he's doing. And then we'll go talk about the defense.
I'm doing pretty good, Daniel. I'm really excited to talk about the defense here, especially after the year that we had last year. It was really interesting because we got all excited about this, you know, thinking that, hey, we're going to have a great, you know, coordinator now. And it didn't exactly turn out that way, unfortunately. So we're going to talk about some of the schematic things we saw. Was it all injuries, things like that? We're going to take a look at that. I'm really excited also to talk about this recruiting class that we're going to talk about some. That should be really good. I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready to get this episode started. We had a good episode last week. Thank you all for listening there. And I think this new program, this new format we got set up is really working well.
Yeah, I'm excited about this new format. I'm getting more and more excited about the season. It was move-in weekend here at Ohio State this past weekend, so it's crazy there. I think it was move-in weekend down in Knoxville as well. So campuses are cranking up. College football season's cranking up, and we're going to talk about the defense today, so let's run through the tee.
You can hear the crescendo of the cheering Volunteer fans rising to the tumult as Tennessee comes racing onto the football field. Wherever you listen, ladies and gentlemen, at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's football time in Tennessee.
Okay, Zach, I think the first thing we need to talk about, and we hinted at again last week, is what we have in Bob Shoop. So rather than talk about the coaching staff as a whole, we're going to dig a little deeper on Bob Shoop schematically, personnel-wise. We know about all the changes in the coaching staff. We talked about Hoke last week. We talked about a new secondary coach. But Bob Shoop specifically, we know there were injuries last year, and so that's always going to be a caveat. There were injuries and injuries to players essential to his scheme. But is there something wrong schematically that explains what went wrong last year? Was it mainly the injuries, or is there something that you saw that concerned you moving forward with how his scheme can work in this conference?
So I think it's a twofold question. I think up front I saw injuries. You lost Shy Tuttle and Khalil McKenzie. We touched on that last week. You know, you lost, just decimated at linebacker. We'll talk about Darren Kirkland in a minute, but losing him was big. Jalen Reese-Maybin was a superstar here. Losing him was also really hurtful for the defense. I think secondary-wise, I was really disappointed. There was definitely a step back, even losing Cam Sutton for the year. It shouldn't have been that bad. Mosley should have been better. Martin shouldn't have been better from their sophomore years, and neither one was. It was definitely a concern there. I think he struggles, at least here at Tennessee so far. I don't think he knows what he wants to run. Does he want to run a 4-2-5? Does he want to run a 4-3? Does he want to be a blitzing team? There was just too many inconsistency. I didn't know what Tennessee, other than having Derek Barnett, thrived on last year. There wasn't a consistent game plan. Like, it felt Tennessee didn't have an identity defensively. There was that struggle that they just couldn't really find what they were good at. And they weren't good at much last year other than, you know, pass rushing was probably their best thing. But it felt like Tennessee, you know, they weren't a zone blitzing team. They didn't man you up on the outside and take away your best receiver. They didn't have a run-stuffing presence. It didn't feel like Tennessee ever had a good foundation and identity on last year's team.
Yeah, and we had the players that flashed. Like, we had Barnett. We had, when they were healthy, some of the linebackers flash. But I do agree with you that when I was looking through the depth chart, thinking about today, when I was looking back at kind of even the teams we drafted last year, like, across the NCAA, I was kind of thinking, like, how would our personnel line up in – because I believe last year you kind of set your team up as a 4-2-5, and I set mine up as a traditional 4-3. And then I got to thinking about our depth chart, and I was like, it didn't seem like we were hardcore one way or the other here. And it sort of puts us in a bind, especially against teams that try to run downhill against us, because I like our nickelbacks, and I like what they could do in a 4-2-5. I like Galdon. I like the people who flashed at safety that can come down and support in the run game. But those aren't necessarily the horses that are going to work in a scheme in the SEC. So we didn't really have the identity last year. Is there a change you would suggest? Like, do you think Shoop should just go with one and stick with it and try to pressure out a nickel? Or do you think we have to kind of hunker down, maybe some linebackers step up, some bigger guys, and the defensive line is enough to stop the run? Because I don't think we're going to get the same pass pressure for nickel to be as effective.
Well, in today's college football, it just seems like the nickel makes more sense, right? I mean, you've got a really good nickelback in Rashawn Golden. You play a lot of spread teams, usually around the country. So it seems like a nickel makes sense in today's college football, but you kind of look, you know, you play Florida, who traditionally lines up with two or three wideouts. You play Georgia, who does usually two to three wideouts. Alabama, more spread last year, but I think it's probably going to go away with Lane Kiffin. I think they'll probably go back to their more traditional fit. So, you know, you look at all these teams you play that run a pro-style offense. LSU's going to run a pro-style this year, too. It just feels like, you know, a 4-3 does make a lot of sense here, but I don't know if the linebackers are good enough. And I like Rashawn Golden on the field. I think he's a really good tackler. I think he can play in the box. And if you wanted to be super creative, you could even, if you needed another guy in the box, you could even move Golden to free safety, Abernathy to strong, and then move Kelly as your nickel to play in the box or your in-box defender.
Yeah, and I like the fact that we have the versatility in the secondary, especially if Warrior is going to command one of those spots, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And I kind of want to push back on a point you made in general, that in today's college football, nickel is kind of the scheme you need to run. I feel like it's weird to say, but with our schedule, we might have one of the more unique schedules where that might not be the case. I mean, we play Mizzou. But are there other teams, especially if Lane Kiffin took the spread with him, that demand attention from nickel? Or can we get away with 4-3? It's just, we're almost in a conundrum because I think nickel's our best package. I think we can do more exotic blitzes. I think it gets those safeties and Galdon involved. And I like those players. But against the schedule we play, a traditional 4-3 where we hunker down and stop the run might be required. And I don't know if we have the horses for that.
Well, I think, you know, we're kind of trying to base it down to he has to play one. You have to be multidimensional in today's college game anyway. You can't just play, you know, nickel the whole time. You can't just play the 4-3 the whole time. You can't just play dime the whole time, whatnot. I mean, you've got to mix it up. I mean, that's the truth there. But, you know, I think as a base defense, he just never looked comfortable. Shoop just didn't look comfortable. And I thought in the first half of the season there were a lot of nice zone blitzes. I felt like there was adjustments made. I'm thinking particularly the Florida game where, you know, Appleby and the play-action game was really good, and we took that away with more pressure. I think the Georgia game, they did a much better job in the second half other than that crazy Eason play at the end of the game. So it felt like the defense was better in the second half of games, which was a problem 2015. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I think in the scheme of things, you know, he normally would play the 4-3 there because we were trailing and teams would, you know, try and run the ball, especially I feel like Georgia tried to do that some. But either way, you've got to be multidimensional. I just feel like I guess it's just a matter of, do you would you rather have the third linebacker at Tennessee or Rashawn Golden more on the field? And I'd rather take Rashawn Golden at this point.
I would too, and we can pick that back up when we talk about who we want to see get a little more playing time at linebacker. But I think you make an interesting point that, and this goes back to the ultimate caveat of injuries, but I remember talking with you and talking on Vol Nation, the Virginia Tech game, we kind of looked lost on defense and it was like, okay, is this going to be a game? And then there was a stretch from the second quarter on, I don't know if I'm remembering exactly, where we allowed like a crazy low number of yards, really shut them down. And we did that in a few different games. And so there were like little weaknesses that we would clean up in the second half. And then when we lose all the guys on the front seven, there was just no way to clean those up. And it showed in the second half of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the Virginia Tech game, they had 400 yards of total offense, but I think 150 of that came in the first quarter, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I could be – I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but that's what it felt like at least. So I think, you know, looking at everything in a vacuum defensively, yeah, Bob Shute was disappointing. There were signs. I think schematically, I just want to see a little bit more. Like, I always thought Jancic was way too basic, way too conservative. Like, he ran one zone blitz, you know, and it was either cover, you know, he ran cover two or he ran two man under and some cover one in there. That was really about it. I just feel like we need to just be more diverse. And I think defensively you can't be as diverse in college because, you know, you get a limited practice time. These guys are students. But it just feels like a little more, I'm not even thinking exotic blitzes, just a little more diversity in your formations where guys line up. Maybe on third down, instead of having Kendall Vickers and Khalil McKenzie be your defensive tackles on a third and 10, maybe you put Kongbo and Phillips inside, run Taylor and Austin Smith on the outside, something like that, just to be a little different, show different groupings, formation groupings. And something that Doug Matthews said on his radio show today was he felt that Tennessee didn't play enough young guys defensively, didn't get them the front. And I agree. I think we gassed out a little bit, too, near the end with, you know, playing – I mean, really, we only played like, you know, what, 15 guys when everyone was healthy. It was, you know, I think you had Tuttle and McKenzie kind of play there, you know, as a backup. And then LaTroy Lewis got a little run. And then you'd play Galton as your fifth, as your third, you know, corner. And really, that was about it. Nigel Warrior didn't play as much as I thought he would. So just different formation packings, running some different looks, just moving guys around, I think would really be beneficial also.
Yeah, and I think that we became predictable in a way. And when you are predictable and you have your horses, you're good. So we were predictable when we made those adjustments and did the same thing and it started working against the Virginia Tech. But when we became predictable with limited personnel, I mean, that's when you get gashed and that's kind of what you expect to happen. But another thing about, I kind of get what you're saying with, you don't mean exotic blitzes. You don't mean like some crazy thing we've never seen before. It almost seems like, and this is obvious, but it seems like what you're saying is we almost just need a couple guys to step up and be a little bit more dynamic. Like instead of Todd Kelly getting burnt every once in a while and we're kind of nervous when he goes to make a play, we need him to flash. And instead of the defensive tackles having little moments, we need them to flash a lot. We need them to command attention. So at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to, do you have players who are going to flash? Because the great defenses can do the same thing over and over. But what's really impressive is when someone makes a play based on instincts or just based on pure physical talent that flashes and overwhelms the offense. And we kind of lost that when we lost certain players. And that, I think, could make the difference in, we don't need the exotic blitzes. We just need a couple dudes to do something that they haven't been doing in the past.
We just need more playmakers, especially at the secondary position, really. Yes. I mean, you know, there just weren't enough interceptions. There just wasn't enough. I mean, there was a lot of sacks. We did a good job getting to the quarterback last year. And part of that was having a guy named Derek Barnett. You know, he's pretty decent. But think about this. So, Havoc rate. We kind of discussed that last year, Daniel.
Yep.
You remember, it's tackle for loss, sacks, forced fumble, interceptions, right? Basically, mm-hmm. per play. Last year, the havoc rate for the defensive backfield was 6.2%. That was 63rd in the country. So not as bad as you would think, but you need that better in the SEC. That's got to be a better number. Our linebackers were 110th in the country at 2.8%. So, I mean, yeah, it's awful. And so you combine that there with the linebacker and defensive back play. Now you're looking in the 80s, high 80s, early 90s there, and you're like way – that's not below average. That's bad. And so you have to have more playmakers. You need a corner. You need Justin Martin to make a couple picks. You need Emmanuel Mosley to make a couple picks. You need Todd Kelly to force a fumble on a blitz. You need Darren Kirkland to make a sack. And he's a pretty good pass rusher. But you need, like, Cordez McDowell needs to make more plays. He just can't be a tackler in that 5 to 10-yard range. He needs to make plays in the backfield. He needs to, you know, pass deflect on tight ends, things like that, to really improve this overall defense. I think that would be really beneficial, and I think that would be really helpful for this team if we can do that. Just need more playmakers. I mean, it's really simple, but, I mean, you can't have the havoc rate that we had last year and expect to, you know, win championships.
Yeah, like, we just don't have – and I understand that we're not in the exact same echelon as a Harbaugh defense, an Alabama defense, even, like, Stanford when they have guys coming off the edge. Like, those defenses are elite for a reason. Like, Wisconsin last year, everybody was dominant. Like, Watt was an absolute maniac. But – we don't have the guys that are flashing, and the guys that we did have that flashed big time are gone. So thinking about the defensive line, we got to have somebody who breaks out. We got to have somebody who either lives up to their potential or just at least fills the spot and is strong in the run game something, because we lost one of the all-time greats at Tennessee there. So thinking about the defensive line, we'll talk about the two deep in 1 second, but before we get there, it doesn't have to be a starter. Who do you think can break out? Who do you think can – we talked about the sack numbers last week. Who we think can break out a little bit there? Is there a defensive end that you think can pressure the quarterback? Is there one of our defensive tackles who's finally going to be an all-SEC-type player? Who's your breakout?
I think Khalil McKenzie is going to have a big year. You know, he's never going to have humongous stats because he plays the one gap most of the time, and so his job is to draw double teams and free up others. But you just feel like, you know, maybe he can cause some havoc. Maybe he can force a couple fumbles. Maybe, you know, more tackles for loss would be really nice from him. I think that would be super helpful. I mean, looking at the numbers, kind of just looking at him here, you know, he's only had one career sack. It needs, you know, he had less than 8 tackles last year, and he got hurt halfway through the year. I get that. But, you know, it just feels like it's out there for him to really be a havoc-causing defensive tackle. I'm not asking him to be Ndamukong Suh, but I just think, like, you know, maybe he could get 12, 13 tackles for loss, you know, 4 sacks and draw double teams every play. Like, that's an all-SEC year, and that's what we need from him. You know, on the outside, yeah, there's some talent there, but if you can have a defensive tackle that has to be double teamed every play and makes plays even when he is double teamed, that really opens up everything else on your defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. We ended up talking about it last week when we talked about Ed Oliver. Talked about, I mean, Gary's going to play outside of Michigan, but he's a big body. If you can just demand attention, eventually you're going to break through and make a couple plays. But, yeah, if you just demand attention as a defensive tackle, you make a difference. Because the games where McKenzie started to flash a little bit, and again, you mentioned the tackle numbers, the one sack in his career, but the games where he and Tuttle flashed a little bit, we started to realize why they were so highly touted, and we started to realize what that could look like if they managed to be healthy at the same time. They really started to demand attention, and it wasn't at the level of the stars that we mentioned last week or the Ed Olivers, but it's at a point where they can at least take away some attention from the defensive ends who are going to need to step up this year.
Yeah, I mean, he can do a lot better than, you know, 1.5 career tackles for loss. I think we can all agree there. You know, in Shy Tuttle, I would pick him, but, you know, he's coming off the injury. We don't even know if he's going to play. So it's kind of – it's a little bit too hard to pick him on there. It's just – I feel like McKenzie has the potential. I don't see that he's impaired athletically. He's got a good body type. He looks super strong. He hasn't shown that yet. But I just feel like it's in him. He has the pedigree. It just – I feel like he's got a big year in him. And it might take a few games, you know, to recover from that pec injury that he had. But if he could really just be a force inside, that defense is going to be so much better.
It really is. And again, like you already mentioned, it's going to be a quiet force. It's going to be – you're going to have to – if you're ball watching and seeing who sacks the quarterback or pressures the quarterback, you're probably not going to see K-Mac. But if you're watching the line play and you're seeing the guy who's demanding two people and still managing to push through a little bit, and they have to dump it off for a screen because the big guy's coming at you, that's where he's going to flash. And so I actually agree with you. I think he's the one who not only could break out, but we really need him to. And then when we think about the Tuttle injury, we think about who we lost, we start to think about the two deep projection. So at the defensive end position, we have Kongbo on one side, and we need him to flash as a pass rusher a little more, but I actually think he's a good 4-3 defensive end. Who starts on the other side? Is it going to be Kyle Phillips? Is he healthy enough? Who is in the mix for that spot?
It sounds like Taylor, I think, is going to be the guy at that spot. It'd be really nice if Phillips could do that. This guy was a consensus 5-star guy. He just hasn't stayed healthy. And honestly, I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus, but he hasn't shown me very much in terms of overall ability yet. I'd actually liked him at defensive tackle last year. I thought he paid more there than he did defensive end. He needs to have he needs to live up to that billing there, but I think it's going to be Daryl Taylor. Taylor's more the pure pass rusher, has really that speed edge to him. But either way, I mean, really, defensive end's going to be there's the talent there. There's plenty of talent, and there's a lot of athletic ability and size, but we have to figure out who's going to produce. Tennessee did lose their top three defensive ends last year.
Yeah, and again, it's not barren. It's not abysmal. And Kongbo's a freak athlete. Terrell is that kind of traditional, like, hey, he's a long pass rusher. Maybe he could turn into something. He's a redshirt sophomore. Like, we don't know yet. But if anybody's going to coach him up, it's going to be the guy that was in the job before moving into Brady Hoke. I mean, these guys produce guys on defensive line. They produce guys on defense in general. We're not undersized. We're not unathletic. It's just a matter of getting in there and getting it done. And I think this year, even if those guys flash, we knew we were going to miss Derek Barnett, but I think we're going to remember how good Vereen was too, because I think these guys could have a pretty good year and not have as good a year as Vereen had.
Yeah, Vereen had 7.5 sacks and 11.5 tackles for loss. I mean, that's a really solid year from your other defensive end. And yeah, some of that was Barnett. Other side, but he three pass breakups too, so he had three deflections on the line. Vereen was a very good defensive end. LaTroy Lewis had 2.5 sacks last year, and he did a nice job. He could be a nice third down option for you. He could give those guys a blow. It just feels like those guys have higher rankings than those three. It's not going to shock me if Kyle Phillips or Jonathan Kongbo or even Daryl Taylor, if they have 7.5 sacks. Not going to be shocked by it, but we just don't know yet. Despite the high recruiting rankings, we don't know if those guys are going to live up to that potential. And yeah, Brady Hoke, fantastic defensive coordinator or defensive line coach, not a good defensive coordinator, fantastic defensive line coach. So, I mean, you have the right guy to do it who has the pedigree of a lot of success at that position. And it feels like hopefully with maybe a little bit of a different ear, no offense to Steve Stripling, I think he did a great job here, but a little bit of a different voice that these guys can listen to, that will help some. But, you've heard a lot of good things about Kongbo this spring. Taylor's got some good marks here. So it's just, if those guys can stay healthy, I think we'll be okay. It's just we got to have one of those guys get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, it's really a matter of can we get pressure, because I think we have a pretty high floor with those guys. I mean, we haven't seen Taylor be elite. We've seen Phillips be okay, not flash like a 5-star. I think they can stop the run. I don't think they're going to make mistakes. I think Kongbo knows what he's doing. I don't think we're going to see some disastrous situation where we can't set the edge like a certain really yoked up defensive end whose name I will not mention. We're not going to see that. There's a high floor. But it's a matter of whether someone can flash and be the sack machine that we need. And if not, then again, we'll get to the secondary later, but a lot hinges on whether or not it's that floor or it's that flash potential. We have some depth concerns as well when we think about the two deep. Are you more concerned about the people behind on defensive end on the depth chart, or are you more concerned because of health concerns with Tuttle about the defensive tackle depth?
I'm more concerned about defensive end. I mean, tackle looks okay, assuming, let's just say Shy is 100% and good to go. And he might miss, like, the Georgia Tech and the Indiana State game, but by Florida, he's ready to go, okay? And I don't think that's too big of – he looks like he's hurt there. So you run – your two deeps probably going to be McKenzie, Vickers, Tuttle, and probably Piku at there. I mean, that's fine. Piku played okay last year. Wasn't great. But then you have Eric Crosby, you know, four-star guy, huge guy. He could probably give you a few good, you know, good reps
snaps,
there. A
yeah.
Game. Yeah, some snaps per game, even if it's not a lot. Alexis Johnson's red shirt, he was a highly ranked defensive tackle who was supposed to help last year. Injuries ran into a couple things outside of school that hurt. But, you know, he was a highly ranked four-star. He's a big body. So hopefully he could come in. I mean, that's – now we're what? We're talking six guys right there. And then Kevon Bennett looks like he's probably going to play a little bit. And then potentially – and then Matthew Butler, who's at defensive end right now, can easily slide inside. And we know Collingbone can slide inside and be okay too. So defensive tackle looks like it's fine in terms of depth. There's enough bodies. After Phillips, Taylor, and Kongbo at defensive end –
We're looking at freshmen and we aren't sure.
DeAndre Johnson, who I like him, but – mid three-star guy. Matthew Butler's probably more of a defensive tackle at that point. Ryan Thaxton's probably going to redshirt. Austin Smith's back at linebacker. Jaquan Bakely was a linebacker converted to defensive end who's never played before here. There's not a lot there at defensive end, to be honest.
Yeah, there's not. And a guy like Johnson is plenty of potential. I love that he enrolled early, but he's not a guy who, in a normal situation, you say, yep, that guy's playing as a freshman, and that's no knock on him. It's just rating-wise, that's not what you would expect right out of that player. So I think we talked about it last week. I like what we're building on both trenches. So it's not being like negative about what we've done in the recruiting trail, what we're doing on the recruiting trail this year. We're on the right track, and I love the coaching staff that's recruiting there. But given what we lost, we just need some players to flash. And if McKenzie and Tuttle can't reach the level that we thought they would reach, then of course the quality of the defensive line isn't going to be what we projected out a couple years ago, because those guys are superstars if they're healthy and good to go.
Exactly. I think the biggest concern for me at defensive tackle is there enough playmaking? There's enough bodies and there's enough guys that are going to hold their gaps. It's just, you know, can someone get a few sacks, some tackles for loss, everything? You know, Vickers is going to be fine. You know, McKenzie can draw double teams. You know, Tuttle's the playmaker if he's healthy. And then, you know, there's enough bias. Capicow is not a bad option. It's not like Alexis Johnson's 300 pounds. He's got pretty good measurables. And then Eric Crosby at 335 is a run stuffer. So you have options there. It's just, I don't know if there's enough bodies at defensive end. It wouldn't shock me. You might have to see Daniel Patulli move down or Austin Smith move back down if injuries happen. Hopefully that doesn't, but, you know, it is football. It is the SEC. You know, you like to have a three deep, and really Tennessee only has a two deep at defensive end.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully it's someone like Butler that can just put in some minutes there, et cetera. I hate when guys have to switch positions, especially multiple times. But, I mean, I'm okay with the floor we're looking at at the early in the depth chart, but through the rigor of an SEC schedule, it's a big concern, and it's going to be something to watch all year. We like the players. We are excited to watch them. It's not Derek Barnett. It's probably not Corey Vereen, and there's not as much depth there.
And the last thing is, think about this. We had a good pass rush last year, and our secondary was bad. If you don't have a good pass rush this year, those guys return. And we'll talk about the secondary, and hopefully Charlton Warren's improved them, but it could have been a lot worse last year secondary-wise, and now you have to replace, you know, close to 25 sacks off your team. So it's a big concern there, and it's not a guarantee that this is going to be a standout defensive line.
No, it's not. And we've kind of done all we can in a way. We just need some players to step up. But it's going to be a conversation piece all season, because we play dynamic offenses and we play offenses that are going to run downhill at whatever depth we have. Thinking about the next line of defense, the linebackers, we know there were injuries last year. We know that we actually have a guy that can flash if he's healthy. But the linebacker, I said it last week, and I've talked to you about it all summer. That's maybe the biggest position of concern for me, even more so than the defensive line. I want to talk about the good first. I want to talk about what the impact would be of a healthy Darren Kirkland. It seemed like one of Shoup's favorite players. We talked last season about how important he is to this scheme. Let's say he's good to go. What does a healthy Darren Kirkland do for Shoup's scheme?
Darren Kirkland Jr. is one of the best middle linebackers in the country when he's healthy, and I have no problem saying that there. You know, he was one of the top five freshman linebackers in the school history when you look at it. He was like top five in tackles in school history as a freshman. He had like the most pass deflections in the last 15 years out of freshman linebackers. He was an absolute stud. I mean, you know, 66 tackles, 6.5 for loss, had a pick, had a fumble recovery. 3 sacks. I mean, that's fantastic for a freshman linebacker. He's a consensus 4-star. He's a great athlete. You know, I think he's got NFL linebacker written all over him. And I think he can really, really be a all SEC first team linebacker. You know, he's not great in pass coverage, but he's still pretty good. And not having him last year was just such a big blow to this team. They just didn't look the same athletically. In that sense, they didn't look like they were as comfortable without him calling the defense. And, yeah, he came back and played the second part of the year, but everyone knew he wasn't 100%. High ankle sprains don't go away. They stay with you all season. And, you know, he's going to become a much better player this year, I think. I think he's got a chance for a 100-tackle season. I love him at middle linebacker. I think he, healthy, just is automatically going to improve the defense, even if we don't get a good pass rush, or even if the secondary doesn't improve like we were hoping. A healthy Darren Kirkland's going to help out a lot and improve the defense.
It really is, and he is in that mold of a guy like Raekwon McMillan, a guy like others like Jerod Mayo, the other star inside linebackers that we've had here. He's absolutely on that level, and it's just a shame that he didn't get to get there last year. The playmaking ability that we talked about was one of the biggest themes of this is why we think Shoup's scheme can work. When we talked about it last year, you broke down the X's and O's. We talked about the guys that he got to work with at Penn State. We talked about the fact that they can do a lot of things and they can provide pressure. They're just playmakers all over the field, and that's why this scheme can be successful. We need guys like Darren Kirkland. Hopefully he's coming into the season healthy. But beyond him, there has to be another linebacker that can make plays, and last year we lost multiple linebackers. But looking at a guy like Cortez or any of the other guys potentially in the two deep, are there other playmakers besides Kirkland? Doesn't have to be on Kirkland's level. He's special. But are there other guys that can do more than exist on the defense?
I'm on record as a Daniel Petulli fan. I think he's a good player. I don't know why he didn't play more last year. Cortez McDowell lost some weight, transformed his body. You know, he looked good his first 2 years. He did not look as good last year. You know, he was injured last year, too. He had some health problems. So, I think I still believe in him. I think Daniel Petulli needs to be the third linebacker and play a lot. I love his game. There was on Vol Nation, KB Vol mentioned that he would move Kirkland to weak side and Petulli to middle linebacker, which I actually really like. Kirkland's great at middle linebacker, but I could see why you'd want to do that. You get them both on the field more. So I would really like to see some of that, play them both at the same time. I think after Petulli and Kirkland, and maybe McDowell, I don't think there's much. Austin Smith, I think, is stuck as a pass rusher hybrid. You know, I don't think he's ever going to find it. Colton Jumper is there. He's average at best. He can play a few plays for you. He can get you set in the right, but there isn't much after that. I don't know. Maybe Will Ignat, the freshman, I think has a big future. I think he could probably play some and help out. But, you know, he's a freshman. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see if Tommy Thigpen can find a couple guys, because you're going to need 4 or 5 linebackers this year that can really help play, you know, in case someone gets injured, special teams, things like that, goal line situations. You need those guys up there.
Is something like – so I actually like the formation of having Kirkland and McDowell in a little bit more of a playmaking position. And Petulli, I mean, he's athletic and he's big, so he can do it. Is there any reason to be concerned – so Kirkland, it seems like if he's healthy, he's going to kind of be the quarterback of the defense in some ways. – is there any reason to be concerned with Betuli that he isn't ready for that role yet? Could Kirkland still do that if he was outside linebacker? Or would putting Betuli at middle linebacker really put a lot on his shoulders as far as quarterbacking the defense?
I guess. I mean, you know, I'm not a football coach. I never understood why you can't just have your weak side linebacker call the plays if he plays every down. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but Butch is adamant the middle linebacker has to call the plays. So it is what it is. Remember, that was the excuse he used for Colton Jumper in 2015 to play over Kirkland.
Was just great.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, still remember the Oklahoma thing game. Thanks, Butch. But anyway, I mean, it feels like I think Betuli could probably handle it. I mean, I don't think he couldn't. He played linebacker in high school, so it's not like he hasn't played it before. I mean, it's not like it's a big deal. I think Kirkland. I just think it'd be fun to have those two on the field at the same time because Batuli's not a weak side linebacker. He's a bigger guy, so I get that. But, I mean, it might be the staff's faith in McDowell. I mean, they love McDowell. Every time they talk about him, they sing his praises. Bob Shoup sang his praises last year. It's just he wasn't healthy, and I don't think he was in the greatest shape last year. And that might have just been – he might have been a victim of a bad strength and conditioning program last year. There were a lot of those guys. So it's not like I don't think he can be talented. I think he can. I think he can be pretty good. I mean, he's a former safety, so he's got the athleticism. It's just he needs to bring consistency to the team and – he's a senior, so he's got to step up and make some plays this year. I think he can bring that, though. I mean, Kirkland McDowell isn't a bad option. It's just, you know, is there anybody behind him that can step up, and can McDowell step up also?
I actually think we both like McDowell, and I could absolutely see him having one of those senior seasons where it was suddenly like we all loved him, and he was so good on special teams, and he moved to linebacker, and we loved that transition. We thought it was awesome. And then I could see him having a big senior year and then suddenly be like, oh, my God, we're going to miss this guy. Like, he finally figured it out. He found out the size he needs to be. He started to flash a little bit more instead of just being a tackler. Mm-hmm. And having those two out there and then the athleticism and size of Betuli as the other guy, whether it's he's in there if it's not nickel package, I'm actually okay with that. I'm not okay with what's beyond that. But if you stop right there and we pretend that ignorance is bliss and that's all that's going on, that can win us football games. We know that there's more to it than that. But just looking at the first part of the two deep, I like those guys. I really do, especially if Kirkland's fully healthy. It's just beyond that that there's not as much fit and there's not as much established talent.
Yeah, if you're going to have to play Colton Jumper and Elliot Berry and Dylan Bates significant snaps, it's probably not a good thing. I mean, no offense to those guys, but none of them impressed me last year. And, I mean, it shows by how bad the defense was last year that they weren't really good options. So, especially I felt Elliot Berry really struggled at times. So, I think the first three I'm pretty fine with also. I think that's fine. It's just if anyone gets hurt, it's okay. You know, we might be in trouble. You know, this could be bad. Or, you know, could Willock not play some, maybe Shannon Reed, something like that. I mean, because those three have to stay healthy if Tennessee wants to have a successful defense.
Yeah, and again, it's our roster isn't one of those elite ones that it's like next man up. It's one of those where we need the stars to play big. We talked about on the D-line. We need K-Mac to play big. We need Tuttle healthy. And here we need Kirkland, McDowell, and Betuli to be what they can be. And we like the scheme if those guys are healthy because Kirkland is so important and he's one of the best linebackers in the country. We just got to have him. I like that we discussed the Daniel Betuli fit. We don't know what's going to end up happening. We don't know if it's going to be Jumper taking snaps, which would be frustrating. But we talked about the fact that we both like him as a linebacker. Now I think we move on to the secondary, another spot where not necessarily terrible. It's not as bad as it's looked sometimes. We're not getting burnt constantly, but nobody's flashing. Well, actually, there are guys flashing. I take that back. Not everyone's flashing. So we need some of the older guys, the seniors, to start to step up, force turnovers, not miss easy things. So out of Kelly, Mosley, and Martin, who do you think improves the most? Who are you thinking either flashes or just kind of finally figures out the little stuff that has to get done right?
I'm probably going to get burnt, but I'm going to say Justin Martin. I mean, he's got NFL potential. I mean, he really does. I thought had a pretty solid year in 2015. It wasn't great, but I thought he looked pretty good. And last year, he was bad. I mean, he was bad last year. I think in the Florida game, particularly those first couple drives, they picked – I mean, Callaway picked him apart. You know, he's never had a pick here. He's only had six career pass deflections, so it's probably more hype than necessarily production. But the measurables are there. You can see the length, the athleticism, the quick hips. He has that ability. It's just, can he produce? I mean, Charlton Warren has just absolutely praised him. He's been around Warren. He looks like a new guy. He's acting like a new guy. So I'm going to buy it just because of that potential, that size, that overall athleticism. But, I mean, I'm not 100% confident. I think Kelly's the most consistent of the three. But it's not, I mean, like I said, he's more of an in-the-box player, I think, as a better fit or as a deep, deep safety kind of. Little bit in that range than overall strong safety and having to guard guys. But I'm kind of curious to see if Martin can step up and Mosley, you know, he's got to be there for Mosley. His lack of production the last 2 years just doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah. Like Justin Martin gives you just enough to dream on. Like he was kind of the JUCO that we saw the size and we saw the measurables and we saw the speed and it was like that can fit in right away. And he sort of flashed early and was moving up the depth chart. So you always think that he's going to reach that new level. Kelly is my pick because I think we already know he does a couple things well. We know that he can play in the box if he's in the mood to tackle. And unfortunately there is that caveat because sometimes I don't know if it's lack of fluidity, but he doesn't bring it as much as he should, I think. But we also know that he can play pretty good center field. And you mentioned it, like he can be a little bit deeper on the safety and he can play some center field and he's going to get some interceptions where he struggles. And again, I don't know if it's just a fluidity thing, like just his size. He's not good when he gets matched up with somebody. He's really not. And I don't know if it's missing on simple things. I don't know if it's a like lapses in judgment, but he's not as good when he has to cover a tight end or a slot guy. If he's able to sit back, he can really anticipate. So I'm picking him because we know he can do some things well. And if he figures the other stuff out, that's a complete player. With Martin and Mosley, we haven't seen them do incredibly good things well beyond measurables, unfortunately.
Yeah, Kelly plays pretty decent inside the box, too, I feel like. It's just if he's in space one-on-one, he's just where he struggles. Yeah, Mosley, I remember we talked about this, I think, in our 2016 preview, was that Mosley was, like, one of the top-ranked freshmen in the SEC by Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
College ranks. And you know what? He actually had a pretty good year. I mean, I think he only got burned a couple times in 2014. I think Ole Miss got him on one. And I feel like maybe in the month in the bowl game, I think Vanderbilt or Kentucky, one of them got him. But I mean, he was pretty good in 2014. He just hadn't stepped up. And I mean, you're probably considering his recruiting ranking. You've gotten what you've probably what you on par of what his ranking was. I mean, he's a pretty good special teams player and he's been a nice option as a corner sometimes, but you know, considering where he was his freshman year, he definitely hasn't really improved yet. He's got a huge wingspan. He's actually built a lot like Martin. I think Martin's a little bigger, but it just feels like Tennessee needs a big time corner. We're going to be seeing some good wide receivers this year.
Yeah, we just, again, these are the guys that these seniors that we need to step up. Kelly has flashed and we love it when he's rolling, but Mosley and Martin, given, I mean, they have the speed, they're pretty long. They don't have shortcomings in that regard. They're just a little bit too ordinary when they're on the field. And these are the players we're talking about when we need guys to flash. We've had some of the younger guys flash. So I think there's one clear answer. But beyond – so will any underclassman take one of these jobs? Is there someone who's going to step up and overcome Martin, get ahead of Mosley, maybe even get ahead of Shaq Wiggins? We know Galdon's going to play. So is there an underclassman corner or safety that you think can be that flash player that we need?
I mean, obviously the easy answer is Nigel Warrior.
Yeah, he's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, Abernathy had a good year last year. He had 16.5 tackles, 3 for loss, 2 picks, 4 pass breakups. So he's going to play. And I thought he got better as he was the one guy that got better as the year went on. He's still not there yet, but I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good player and maybe even be a solid pro NFL player. I don't know if Warrior's going to play over Kelly, just considering that Kelly's a senior and a local guy. Maybe on, like, third downs they switch him out. I don't know. But I think at the very least Warrior will play more, just maybe in some 3-3-5, some big nickel situations. The other guy is, and I'll go ahead and say it, and you know who I'm probably going with this, is I still think Baylen Buchanan, even though they put him at nickel, he's the second string nickel right now. I think you put him outside, I think he could easily take one of those spots. I still believe he's an NFL corner.
Yeah, I wrote down Baylen because I knew that he would get mentioned. I wrote down Osborne.
Really?
Well, I mean, he's got the length. When you started talking him up last year from looking at his film, I think you were spot on with, like, there's something here. Like, we don't know exactly what yet, but it's not nothing. And he rose pretty quickly in camp last year, and that matters as a freshman. And then I think Osborne can be the physical corner that we need. He's really athletic. He was a pretty well-rated recruit. Warrior's the obvious answer. I think he's going to play. I love Micah. I wouldn't be incredibly surprised if our best safety combination in some games was Micah and Warrior.
I would agree with that. I think that's fair.
Yeah, so I hope Kelly steps up and just plays the good center field and downhill that we know and love. But as far as if they're forced to match up with guys, we haven't seen Warrior play, so this is all just dreaming a little bit. But as a complete safety, if you're going to be asked to match up with guys, I think Micah is better than Kelly, and we know how much potential Warrior has. So Warrior's the obvious answer, but if I were Martin, Wiggins, or Mosley, I wouldn't feel completely comfortable. They can't get complacent because they don't have the jobs locked down completely no matter what.
Well, and, you know, the two freshmen, Sean Schamberger and Cheyenne LaBruza, are both lost their stripes already.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is truly indicative of how good they're going to be. I think that's a little overhyped by the local crowd. But either way, LaBruza was pretty ranked pretty highly. Not a huge 4-star, but a high 3-star guy. And I mean, he's got good measurables, and he comes from a pretty good school. So I think he's going to play a little bit. Maybe Schamberger might not as much. I still like I still love Baylen Buchanan. I think moving the nickel's a slight mistake. You know, Osborne, I disagree with. I just haven't heard anything from him in fall camp. I don't know if he's been injured or whatnot, but I mean, I was pretty happy with Marquell Osborne when we got him. I thought he was going to be good, but it just feels like he got lost in the shuffle last year. I think that's an interesting name you brought up. I didn't even really think about him in looking at this. I mean, I knew he's on the roster and everything, but
right.
I just feel like he's getting lost in the shuffle too. I hope not. I mean, he's got talent, but it just feels like LaBruza and Schamberger have been getting more hyped than him.
You could be right. I think I saw Osborne's name mentioned a little bit with special teams, so that may have been like where my mind went as a guy who might be involved in punt returns, not necessarily the starter, but just that's where I saw his name. He may not step up. I wanted to ask one last question about the secondary, about the two deep, and we know that there are other guys that could be involved. I'm excited to see a depth chart because we're going to have to see one fairly soon. How many guys in our two deep would you be completely confident in if they're on the field?
Abernathy and Galdon.
That's all, right?
Galdon. Yeah, so that's two.
So the fact that we haven't mentioned Galdon, I think, is fine because
we know what he is.
Right, we know. We're not really worried about someone taking his spot. And we did. I mean, if we had picked a who's the best player, then it probably would have been Galdon. So
yeah, he had 6 tackles for loss out of that nickel spot last year. It's exactly what you want. 4 pass breakups. Like to see maybe a couple picks here, but honestly, he wasn't really asked to guard. Like, here's the thing. I don't remember any slot receivers burning us last year, which is a vast, vast improvement over the past because it felt like slot receivers would just kill us. So I'm perfectly okay with that. I mean, I like Galdon. I think he's really good. I think he's even a little underutilized. I think he could play outside if they really wanted to push in there. He's got the size. He's got the makeup to be a really good NFL player. I think he'll be an NFL guy. Yeah, he's really good. I mean, there's not really much to say there. I still, you know, you mentioned that question, going back to the original question there. If Mosley's in there, I'm not expecting bad. Like, he can,
yeah.
He's been average the last 2 years, but I don't, his floor is higher than Martin's, even though his ceiling isn't. And I feel like there are times when Martin last year where he went in and teams just went after him and he just got burned. I don't felt like that was necessarily the case with Mosley. Like, he wasn't good last year, but I feel like if he's in the two deep, even if he's not necessarily starting, I'm not scared for that. Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's kind of like Kongbo, where you kind of just have to temper your expectations. Like, maybe he's not going to be an elite pass rushing defensive end. Maybe Mosley is not going to be some guy who takes advantage of his speed and makes crazy plays, but he doesn't really get smoked a lot. And I mean, we don't really get burnt like we used to. You just mentioned the slot receiver. Those are under control. So we need some guys to flash, but it's not the deep fear that we used to have with guys like Coleman out there.
Yeah, I mean, he had 50 and a half tackles and 6 pass breakups. I mean, you don't want 50 tackles from any of your corners. That means your linebackers aren't doing their job. But, I mean, you know, he's a pretty good tackler also. I mean, he's not a playmaker in terms of he's not going to make a lot of picks. He's not going to take one side of the field away. But if he's in the two deep, even if he doesn't start, if Shaq Wiggins, and I don't think it's going to happen, I think Mosley's going to start. But if Wiggins and Martin beat him out, Mosley as your third corner, outside corner, isn't necessarily a bad option.
I agree there. That's one that, like, saying confident, when you think of it as in terms of, like, if he's on the field, I'm not expecting us to get, like, to give up points on that side of the field. Mosley's in that category. And I think Galdon and Abernathy are higher than him, but Mosley's in the category of, I feel confident that this side of the field is taken care of, but we don't have a superstar out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the best way to put it. Kind of reminds me a little of Art Evans, if you remember him. Like,
yeah.
He's not a superstar, but, like, it's not, like, the worst thing ever is he's out on the field.
And then we have some guys who could be superstars, and we'll track that throughout the season as well. You and I are the same in that even if we see some holes and we see some, like, dings on a guy like Todd Kelly, we're still super excited to see. I mean, it's a new season every year. We know better than – not better than anyone or anything, but we know that guys like Daryl Taylor, guys like Todd Kelly, who haven't done anything before, that can absolutely change in college football because people just develop at different rates. They understand the defense at different rates, and people have to get their body in the correct order. So we're absolutely going to be looking for these guys to flash, even if it were guys that we weren't as confident in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Charlton Warren's going to help. I think he's a good football coach. I think he'll help out. You know, when he was brought in North Carolina, that defense got better. So I think that's going to help here. So I'm going to deviate a little bit from the outline. I'm going to put up a question for you here, okay?
Okay.
Do you think after 1 year, what you've seen, Bob Shoop is still the answer as defensive coordinator?
I just don't have a lot of faith in the roster. I think that I'm a little bit more pessimistic than you are about the overall team this year.
So,
and it's not,
I think it's more the roster this year, not necessarily Bob Shoop.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think about this year's team and think, oh my God, Shoop is going to do this season in. I really don't. That hasn't crossed my mind. He doesn't give me extreme confidence, but I don't sit there and think, oh my gosh, this is really worrisome because Shoop just absolutely tanked it last year. I'm in the camp of, it was a crappy year, man. We lost key guys, we lost stars, and when we had those stars, we kind of figured it out on defense. So it's not, we're entering the season and I feel horrible that we have all this talent and Shoop is going to crap it away. It's that I'm really kind of worried about the roster.
I think that's fair. I don't necessarily think it's as bad as you portray it because there's still a lot of veterans. There's still some good talent. There's a lot of stars, even though those may not be the end-all to be-all. But I think you don't go from being a guy who produced four straight top 25 defenses and become a bad defensive coordinator. I just don't think that happens. I don't know. I don't believe we're going to have a top 20 defense, but I just can't imagine it's going to be as bad as it was last year, where you're giving up 400 yards rushing to Kentucky and you're giving up 400 yards passing to Vanderbilt. And Missouri's got 500 total yards. Like, I don't think it's going to be that, where you're going to have probably like the 90th ranked defense. I just don't think that's possible. And I just think Bob Schutz, I saw some stuff. I still need to see a little bit more. And having the guys that he probably had a huge input in is going to help too. Because I'll be honest, Willie Martinez, I just don't think was ever a good coach here. And Brady Hoke brings a different dynamic that Steve Stripling didn't. So I think it's going to be better, and I still have hope in Bob Schutz.
I like that Butch wasn't complacent on that side of the ball, and we talked about that last week. I mean, he went and got Shoop when he needed to. He said, we need new blood in here. He got the secondary coach. He got the defensive line coach. He is no longer the guy. I mean, he on offense, it's a different story. But overall, he's no longer the guy that's like, is his loyalty going to do him in, blah, blah, blah. No, he goes and gets dudes that he thinks are going to get the job done. So I have a lot of faith in the coaching staff, and I think part of the reason for my it's not pessimism. It's pessimism relative to where you are right now, and through these previews, you might get me a little more excited. It's just I think that when we've gone through like the dips in recent years, like because this is going to be a dip. I mean, we lost so much. But when we've gone through the dips in recent years, and by that I mean like the couple of coaches before this, the dips have involved like really bad, really, really prohibitive O-line play. And I'm sort of still scarred by the fact that like we see all this talent on the roster. We see John Kelly. We see a decent defense that if healthy, Shoop can actually make good. But I still have these like images of it's not going to matter because the O-line is an embarrassment. And I do not think that's what the O-line is going to be. I just haven't convinced myself of it yet.
Well, and that's probably we'll have to say for during our Georgia Tech preview in a couple weeks. But, I mean, defensively, I just think looking at what Bob Schutz brings, you know, I didn't see maybe the imagination I thought I would see. But I still think he can coordinate defense. I still think he knows how to game plan. We lost five of our top six defenders last year.
Exactly.
And, you know, you lose Tuttle, you lose Sutton, you lose Kirkland, you lose Jalen Reeves-Maypin. Those four top five. So, and it just like that played a factor no matter what you want to say. It does. And I mean, Tennessee lost the most starts most starts by injuries last year with their starters. So it was a factor, and it's gotta be better just because attrition wise in terms of injuries and everything, it's bound to be that way. And I still believe in Bob Schutz. I still think he'd be a good coordinator. It's just, you know, can guys step up? That's really the question. Could Kongbo live up to potential? Can Martin live up to his potential? Can, you know, McKenzie live up to his potential? If they can, then I think Tennessee can not only have a average defense, they can have a good defense.
Yeah, like the number of rosters in college football that could survive the injuries that we had last year, you can count them on one hand. Like you're talking like Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, maybe Michigan, and maybe a team like Wisconsin or LSU or Michigan State. Like, those are the teams that can survive that level of attrition. And even then, you don't normally see that level of attrition. That there's a reason it led the country. So when I think about this season, my not being at the optimistic level that I usually am is not directly related to Shoop. It's an overall thing.
Which makes sense. I mean, we haven't gotten to predictions yet. We will in a little bit, you know, not this podcast, but, you know, a couple weeks. I just think Shoop's still a good defensive coordinator. I mean, that's just my honest opinion.
I agree with you. I'm still in on him. We're going to need some help. And to think about how that's going to happen on both sides of the ball, I want to start talking about the recruiting class, 2017 recruiting class. We landed maybe the biggest of the big fish that we always talk about, not necessarily the highest rated prospect we've ever gotten, but there's some funny reasons for that. We're going to caveat most of our discussion as answer this question, but you're not allowed to say Trey Smith, which I think is funny, and it's actually that's the right way to do it because he's the answer to a lot of things.
The whole outline says not Trey Smith, like in parentheses for both.
Yeah, stuff. Which I love, but I think that warrants talking about him first. So you sent a picture to me like last week of what you told me was an 18 or 19-year-old Trey Smith. I'm still skeptical that it was not like a 34-year-old NFL veteran. What do you think his impact's going to be? Before we talk about on the field, he's the big dude in the class. He's already seeming like just the way he walks around seems like big man on campus. He's a star player in state from the other side of the state, which we know the relationships there were tarnished for a while. What's just the impact of having a dude like Trey Smith in your class and how that lines up for future classes at that position?
I think he's just him and I'll even talk about Cade Mays here, who was dominant in the Maryville loss Friday. I got to see him play a little bit. Just having those two big five-star guys, Tennessee guys, just it's huge. I mean, Trey's a huge talent, despite what rivals wants you to tell us. He's a bona fide five-star guy. He's a future tackle. Maybe not a left tackle, but he's at least going to be a dominant right tackle. He's got great footwork. Looking at the film, you know, he's super strong. His head's in the right place. He's not only physically is he more mature than your normal 18-year-old football player. He also is more mature as a human being too. Just listen to him talk in interviews and how he handled his recruiting process and everything, being an early enrollee. I love his game. I think I would put him right now. I would make him the starter at right tackle from day one. That would be me. The rumors seem to be right guard, but you know that maybe it's starting to, you know, it's iffy right now. But I think he should be the day one right tackle. I think he's got just incredible amount of potential. I think he can be an absolute stud, and I think he's the best prospect that. And you've had Bryce Brown, and there were questions about Bryce Brown. Not necessarily from a talent level, but other stuff, right? Like, to me, this is the best recruit Tennessee has had since Eric Berry, which is saying something. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's the real deal. I mean, this isn't somebody who it's like we are talking him up because he's an in-state guy and, you know, he doesn't have the measurables, but by gosh, they should rank him high anyway. He's the real deal. Like, I understand where he falls in the composite ranking, and I'm not doing the thing where, like, we'd rather have him than anybody. I'll take any of the top left tackles any year, thank you very much. But he's in the same ballpark as the top recruits have been. And I think Leatherwood might have been the number one offensive tackle. But when I watch the film of the stars going against each other at these showcase-type events, there are times where Leatherwood gets beat. There's not really a time where Smith isn't handling business, and there's a reason he's already projected to be a starter. He's got the size. He's the prototypical everything. Like you said, who knows if he'll be left tackle, but having a guy who's going to be a first round right tackle, especially I was listening to a podcast recently about the NFL, and they're more and more the side of the tackle doesn't matter as much because it's not necessarily protecting the blind side anymore. It's just blocking an elite pass rusher. Like wherever the good pass rusher is, he's going to find who he wants to go against. So the left tackle and the right tackle are becoming equally important. You have to be huge. You have to be athletic and you have to be smart. And it seems like he's all those things.
Not only that, I think the most impressive thing to me about Trey Smith is he's a mean dude, and I don't know if you saw the highlights of Cade Mays, but he's a mean country boy dude. Trey Smith has that in him. Already becoming the leader of this group, you hear Doug Matthews has said that, the coaching staff has said that. He's just got all the – not only does he have the physical intangibles, he has all the mental intangibles that you want. Everything that you need from a offensive lineman, Trey Smith has. And, you know, there's a reason he was – number one on ESPN, number seven on Scout, number five on 247. I think I got those right. You know, Rivals was the only one that ranked him lower for obvious reasons that were not football related. So, I mean, he's an absolute beast. He's going to be a great player.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And when you talk about a mean streak, we still need to see a little bit more out of Drew Richmond, but he has the tools. He was another really highly rated guy. But Coleman Thomas, when he's healthy, has a mean streak, and he's really good. Jayshon has always had a mean streak ever since he started out at guard. Jack Jones is maybe one of the meanest dudes on the team. And then Trey Smith, we know that that's his reputation. And then we got to figure out the right tackle position. Maybe it ends up being Smith, maybe not. But we have guys on the line who are ready to roll. And like I mentioned in the previous, at the end of the previous segment, I'm starting to convince myself that, oh my gosh, the O-line is there, so I can be a little bit more optimistic. And guys like Smith, guys like Richmond, and then you add the other guys on the inside, there's a lot of reasons for optimism. And then Smith being this good this early, it's kind of what you expect based on the ranking. Like, I think we almost, as a collective fan base until this fall camp, forgot this was the number one player on ESPN. Like, I think most other years, if like Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State had gotten the number one player on ESPN, all we would have been talking about is how bad we wish we could have that dude. Like, oh my God, how lucky, embarrassment of riches. Well, we got him this year, and he is a monster. And he's in the depth chart, like, right after fall camp starts. He's starting. So it's all real, and I think he's going to be really good.
Well, and then the fact that he's from West Tennessee, and Tennessee hired his sister, let's just call it as it is, but everyone does that. It's not just Tennessee, so, and it's in the rules, you know. But you look, you know, you got Greg Emerson in the 2018 class. You got DeAndre Lidiker also in that class. Both guys kind of, and Brent Lawless, all outside of East Tennessee. And I think part of that is having Trey Smith, a guy like Trey Smith here, who's kind of setting that precedent. Maybe it's, you know, last couple of years in state didn't go great, and we'll talk about that in just a second here, but it seems like we're getting that back, and I think Trey Smith plays a part in that.
Yeah, he really does. And then I think, you know, given the success we're having right now, I think we also have to talk about the flip side. The in-state hall last year, we kind of know what happened in some ways. It could have been absolutely incredible. It didn't quite reach that. There were certain guys we weren't going to get, but T. Higgins and Amari Rogers were guys that we sort of expected to get, and then it suddenly completely turned and never turned back in our favor. What does the loss of T. Higgins mean? I mean, are we're not 100% hurting a wide receiver. We'd always welcome someone that good, but I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit of a pain in the butt to watch him at Clemson in the coming years.
It was unfortunate just to have a guy like him who grew up a ball fan, who grew up 20 minutes from Neyland, just go to Clemson like that, you know. And I don't know exactly the particulars of what happened. It was just an unfortunate one. You get T. Higgins and it raises the level of the class a little bit. He's a five-star wide receiver, and you need a guy like him. I mean, we love Josh Palmer, and, you know, Jordan Murphy has a lot of potential, but having a guy like T. Higgins would have really changed the dynamic of this class. And, you know, losing him, seeing him go to Clemson is just an unfortunate thing. The in-state wasn't as good in 2016, 2017. We talked about that. I mean, we got Trey Smith. That was the big one, right? I mean, that was the important part. And we got Ty Chandler, who I think was super important too. But it did hurt a little bit. I think it hurts the perception a little bit. Like I said, it looks like Butch has fixed that this year. In 2018, he's got six of the top nine already. But it is a little bit unfortunate there that it just didn't pan out the way that we all thought it could have, you know, back in, you know, what, February of 2017.
Yeah, and it's brutal, but I mean, if you gave me the choice between Smith and Higgins, I'm taking Smith every time.
I agree. With that,
wide receivers are, it's really visible, and it's like there's going to be a time where Clemson is playing in prime time, and T. Higgins is being featured before the game, and they're sitting there talking, especially if we're still ranked and in the mix, they're absolutely going to be talking on ESPN about how, yeah, they went and got this guy right out of Knoxville, and Butch Jones missed on him. And that's going to be really annoying. But as far as what it means to a roster, unless he becomes a superstar Julio Jones, AJ Green type, I think we're going to be okay. Because it's not like we're terrible at wide receiver. And I'm going to say this, and he's going to go, like, catch six touchdowns this year, like be Mike Williams or something. But I'm okay missing on a wide receiver. It just sucks that it was right in our backyard.
That was the big thing. It's the fact that he was in Oak Ridge. That was the big thing. And, I mean, you know, like Jacoby Stevens from Murfreesboro, he went to LSU. He was not a Vol fan growing up. He never even really gave Tennessee a serious look. So it's like, okay, whatever. But losing Jacoby Stevens and Amari Rodgers, who's T. Martin's son, and you know, missing out, you know, well, we didn't miss out, you know, passing on Chase Hayden, who's really starting to have a good impact on Arkansas. He's probably going to be in the two deep. Is a blow. It's just a couple guys that you miss there. And we got Ty Chandler, Malik Gray, and Dre Smith as that top, you know, three of the top six. That's really good, and I'll take that. Latrell Bumpus, I think, was underrated in the rankings. But, you know, there's some negatives to the class. It's not highly ranked. It's 17th overall in the composite. Tennessee didn't have one service put them in the top 10. It was not maybe as good as a year as I think everyone was hoping for, especially with the high expectations that were coming into for the recruiting year.
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, an ordinary class, and unfortunately in the SEC, ordinary classes mean that you're behind. Like, it means that you're in a lot of trouble, so you have to really land everybody. And, I mean, you can't blame a kid for going to Clemson right now. Like, what?
No, you can't. They're the defending national champion.
Right, they're monsters. They have the quarterbacks lined up. You're sitting there looking at Mike Williams and your T. Higgins, and you're like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I think I could get around to doing that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, Mike Williams getting $20 million guaranteed. So yeah.
Like okay. And I mean, we got Malone more involved last year and Jennings flashed a little bit, but it's just not the same. And their offense is a lot of fun in Clemson. So honestly, this is just like my attitude on these things. I'm excited to see what he does. I don't like Clemson. I'm annoyed by them. I wish we would have gotten him, but I'm going to be excited to see if T. Higgins is good. Like, I'm not going to be rooting for him necessarily, but I hope he goes down there and kills it. So,
I'd rather T. Higgins go to Clemson than Trey Smith go to Alabama.
Exactly. Like, we got to think about the trade-offs that were possible here. Thinking about the in-state last year, we mentioned that, like, Stevens wasn't a possibility. We missed on Higgins. There are a couple guys that, like, were in the mix, and I think a lot of them ended up, like, we didn't pursue them at the very end, and that's not just me saying that. I think that was pretty well documented with a couple guys. But besides Trey Smith, and here we are, the non-Trey Smith questions, who's your favorite in-state signee? So we had a decent class, and we have some guys that are exciting even if they're lower ranked. Out of all those in-state guys, who gets you the most excited?
So I don't think he might necessarily be the best in state, but I love Latrell Bumpus. I really think he was underrated because everyone had him as a defensive end, but they moved into tight end. He's 6'4", 255, 260 as a freshman. He's got good – ran like a 4.740. I mean, he's got pretty good measurables there. I mean, actually, it's better than pretty good. Those are really good measurables. Larry Scott's really praised him. He's going to play, too, because we need another tight end.
We need help there.
Yeah, we need help there after Ethan Wolf. Eli Wolf's okay, but I don't want him being the second tight end going into the season. I really like Bumpus. I think he can be a really dynamic, over-the-middle target. And Ethan Wolf's been criticized, probably unfairly, for his toughness. Bumpus does not seem to have that problem. And I think he can also be a really good blocker, too, going forward. Because, you know, him playing defensive line mainly in high school and with his size, he could be a really dynamic two-way tight end.
Yeah, I like him a lot. My mom actually went to Hardin County High School, so that was kind of cool seeing Latrell be, like, so highly ranked and so sought after. So that was a lot of fun to track, and I'm glad we ended up with them. And I think the main thing is, with you mentioning the tight end switch, after Wolf, I mean, he's gone this year. And Eli's fine, but he's not elite. And, I mean, it could be Bumpus's job next year. So when you talk about the switch, we just talked about the defensive in-depth. I'd like to see him there as well. But you can't be in two places at once. And there's a chance he's the starting tight end next year. So I think it's a good move. I think he's the kind of guy that we think of when we think, oh, a tight end could really work in this offense. We think about that body type and that athleticism. My favorite guy, we're going to talk about Chandler a little bit later. So we're both excited about him, but you and I have talked about it. I like Malik Gray a lot. I don't think he's going to start on the defense this year, but we're hoping that he's in that mold of impact on special teams. He's a bigger body, so maybe put on a little bit of weight, and he might be in a safety role, but he might slide down into that Cortez McDowell role in the coming years. And that's projecting a lot out, but he's sort of the mold that we're used to seeing with that. He's another one that I think if other teams in the conference got a similarly ranked guy with that size, our fans would be like, gosh, that was a great land. It's an embarrassment of riches. Well, he's one that's ours, and he's a big safety, athletic, really highly rated. So that's my pick, but I like Chandler a lot. I like Bumpus, especially given where he went to high school. And again, it was a non-Trey Smith question.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a non-Trey Smith question there. Theo Jackson's gotten a lot of raves. They're saying he might be in the two deep. So that will be really interesting to watch if that happens. I'd be really curious there. I like Princeton Fan. I'll talk about him in just a minute. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting to kind of see, you know, the in-state couldn't have been as good. There's still some good players in this, though. And I think Karan, I probably messed up his first name, Karan Albert, Calbert, I think can be really good. He got injured, but he's definitely got the measurements and the athleticism he won an offensive tackle down the road.
Yeah, like it was a full in-state class that I think is going to pay off and pay dividends, not just at the top, but the guys further down. And being in the two deep at safety for a guy that young, I don't think it's impossible, because I think more and more we might see Barry as just a returner. And I think that's okay. He's so dynamic there. But it wouldn't surprise me if we see somebody else playing that backup safety spot later in the year. I like the in-state class. I like what the in-state class is looking like this coming year. Kind of leads us to the question of, we have the number 6 class right now on 247. So Ohio State, Texas, Miami, Penn State, and Oregon are ahead of us. We're number 1 in the SEC. We're ahead of Florida, who's 8th. We got off to a really good start, especially at positions of need, and credit to Brady Hoke. But a lot of it's Butch Jones, and we know this guy has had success recruiting in the past. We need it to be translated to the field in every way. But overall, are you happy with just the recruiting of Butch Jones based on what you can expect and where we need to be?
Can I be happy but disappointed?
I think so.
Because that's my I think he kind of set himself up for failure in 14 and 15 with those two top 10 classes. And he's had some attrition in those, but we still had a lot of good players in those two classes there. I was disappointed with 2017. 2016, I think I said I was slightly disappointed. I think I was really there was just two guys we missed out on that, had we got them, we would have been set to go. It just felt like we missed out on everybody other than Trey Smith in 2017.
Yeah.
I still like – I love LaBruza. I like Jackson. I like Chandler, Princeton Fant. There are guys I like, but it just felt like I don't know if we got enough impact guys. I like that they decided to do maybe long-term development on offensive line, Calbert, Locklear, those kind of guys. But it was a little slightly disappointing, I think. I'm happy the talent level's there. If, like, Butch Jones left after this year for whatever reason, a guy could come in and win the SEC East by his second year. Easy. And he can still win the SEC East now. So it's not like it's a bad situation or anything, but it just feels like a couple more impact players would be really helpful.
It does, and I think you're right that we're not going to be barren in the trenches anymore, and I still have shock over when we were. So we're going to be – we talked about it last week. He's setting up the foundation of – he came into a roster that for some reason, like, hadn't recruited O-line for a year, and I think he made it a point of, we're always going to have these guys in the chute. And as long as some of them stay healthy, we're always going to be okay at the O-line. And then if some of them flash, we're going to be great on the O-line. And I think we're going to see that this year. We're set up really well there. I think this next year, I mean, the in-state class for this next year is serious business. Like, we have some really good players. And, I mean, we talked about Cade Mays. We talked about Emerson and the work Hoke is doing. But Taylor, he showed out at the most recent kind of showcase event. He's absolutely dynamic when the ball is in the air, incredibly good athlete. And again, we're building positions of need. So we've got 3 defensive tackles in state. I like the way Butch Jones recruits. I think he's always in the headlines for these dumb reasons that people like to make fun of. But if the worst thing that people have to say about our program is that Butch Jones is like super happy that his guys have great GPAs and are good people, bring it on. Like, there's a whole lot worse things that can be said about a coach, And I think that stuff that gets Butch Jones made fun of, in the aggregate, it helps him on the recruiting trail. I realize that, like, we always say he shouldn't say these dumb things at pressers because it makes us look stupid and blah, blah, blah. I think it might make us look like it's a nice punchline for fan bases on Twitter. But the recruits and recruit families have to love this stuff. Like, the kids have to be excited to come here. And that's what you get with Butch Jones. He's like a better version of the kind of like charismatic guys, like cult of personality guys. He's kind of as high as you can get on that. And I love the positivity, and I think it actually pays off instead of being something to make fun of.
I'd rather be life champions than whatever the hell Ole Miss is going to be next year.
Exactly. Like, the fact that that's a punchline to me, I understand, like, how, like, college football Twitter and the SEC fans, like, I understand how it works. It's like, whoever can say the most clever thing, especially if you're making fun of someone, I get it. But is that really that bad? Like, I think people are just willfully turning it into something that it's not. He just said something, and it's turned into the biggest thing of all time, when really it's actually a good thing.
And something else, too, and people, this is kind of relating to recruiting. People kind of make fun of him for it, but he never has to worry about bad stuff. Tennessee's out of the news. It's a, you hear anytime someone graduates or goes off here, it's all positive for the most part. So that helps on a recruiting trail if you're not in controversy like a lot of other places. Tennessee doesn't have to worry about that. And I think recruiting's going to pick up, too. I think it's going to be a better program. I don't think it's a mistake. Right now we have the 6th best recruiting class, and we just put 4 guys in the NFL this past year.
Yeah. I mean, if we can put, like, say, another running back in the NFL, start putting some linemen in the NFL, we think Jawan and them are going to get there. Kirkland, I mean, it's lining up. These guys that he's recruited – we haven't had the crazy good results on the field, but as far as individual players, some of them might get there, and that's how you continue to build the recruiting like this. And having, I mean, obviously having a guy like Cade Mays, who's like all vol from the beginning, is awesome. So I think he's doing awesome on the recruiting trail. I think I would argue against anyone who says that this like peppy stuff is actually a negative. I think that's crazy, and I think it's just a dumb way of thinking about it. I really like what he's doing. We talked last week about the problems we have with him in game and on the field, but that's a different thing. I like what he does with this program overall. I like Butch Jones. I really do.
He's an above average coach that, you know, doesn't get you in trouble. So, I mean, I'll take that most of the time. And let's just be honest, if he doesn't win a championship in the next couple of years, he's going to be fired. That's just the nature of the business. And at the very least, whenever he leaves, whether he gets a better job or whether he is fired or whatever happens, the program's in much better hands than it was when he got here, and that's a positive thing to say. So, I don't really understand all the hand-wringing sometimes about it, but I also like to think I have a little more positive outlook on my life than making fun of my college coach for saying a not smart thing 1 week under a high-pressure press conference situation.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that he has to say something. I think what he says is fine, and the dude is killing it on the recruiting trail lately, so I'm good to go with that.
Yeah, and like, in the top 10 class this year and wins the SEC East, I won't care what he says.
Yeah, I think we disagree on the possibilities of winning the SEC East, but that is for a different podcast in a couple weeks. I think what we should do now is go to our quick Twitch section. This is going to be focused on recruiting. Again, we talked a lot about the in-state guys. There are a lot of other good guys that are going to have an effect outside of Trey Smith. And we should maybe title the podcast Outside of Trey Smith. Besides Trey Smith, who do you think is the best pro prospect? And there's a lot of projection here. But who do you think is the best NFL prospect if we were looking at combine ratings right now?
So I'm going to go with the second guy. I'm just going to go with Ty Chandler just because of that 4.3 speed he has. At the running back position, I've heard some people say he's the best home run threat Tennessee's had since LaMarcus Coker, when they're forgetting about John Kelly, but that's okay. so I think he's an absolute future NFL running back. I think he'll probably be the starter next year. I'm really excited to get him on board and see what he does. I think he's going to be the definite number two. Might not get the carries this year just because I think Kelly's that good, but he's definitely going to be an NFL running back, in my opinion, as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about him a little bit as well on another question. My best pro prospect, I almost went with Crosby. I don't like the fact that he's only 6'1", because that kind of stuff, when you're looking at pro prospects, that really matters. Like, being 6'3", 6'4", defensive tackle helps. I went with Matthew Butler. There's some talk that he'll move inside, and he might put the bulk on to do that. But given that, like, Phillips has maybe moved inside and come back out, and then Kongbo has moved inside and come back out, I could see a guy like Butler being a 4-3 defensive end who's really good. And I don't think he's the Derek Barnett mold. I don't think he's that level of athleticism. He wasn't, like, playing solid tight end in high school like Barnett was. But it's a little bit of a similar build, and he's getting a little bit of fun talk about him already. He's a big dude, and I could absolutely see him being a tweener. And if he stays at 4-3 defensive end, I think that's the kind of guy that can play 4-3 defensive end in the NFL if he's athletic enough. And that's to be determined. There's projection here. But size-wise, and if he can stay a defensive end or if they want him to, I think that could be really helpful.
It looks like he's got good weight on, too. Like, he could put on some more also. Just kind of looking at him and everything. I actually think he could be a great 3-4 defensive end.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think he could be really interesting to kind of watch and look there. Yeah, I think that that's a good pick. I think he could be, he's what, about 280 right now, 6'4", 280. So,
right, so it might be hard for him to stay a defensive end.
Yeah, it might not be. It might not be a classic Tennessee defensive end that we have, because most of our guys are on the lighter side at defensive end with the speed. But I think he could be a great pass-rushing defensive tackle, too, at the very least.
Like a Malik Jackson type.
Yeah, like Malik Jackson, which we were mentioning, we were talking about before the podcast. We could have one of those guys. We haven't had a great pass rushing defensive tackle in a long time. So, I mean, it'd be nice to have him. I think Crosby, you mentioned him. I think, you know, they're trying to get him to lose weight, but mm-hmm. it just seems like he could be kind of like a Tony McDaniel and just be a nose tackle for 7, 8, 9, 10 years and have a really good NFL career. Maybe not be the best overall pro, but just have a nice little 10-year NFL career as a run-stuffing defensive tackle.
You know who was pretty good in that role for a long time at similar size was Dan Williams.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Williams had a pretty good career, too. I think he was a little bit lighter and a little bit taller, but, I mean, first-round pick has had a nice career in the NFL. I mean, 3-4 defensive tackles are still a thing. I mean, they're still possible. You still need a nose guard in the middle there. He could definitely be that. I don't think that's a bad pick at all. But I think Butler does have a little bit more upside, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's hard to know how these guys are going to flash pass rushing, because we talked about Kongbo and Taylor are so athletic, but we don't know yet. So we have no idea if Butler is going to be able to rush the passer. But at that size, and it looks like good weight, if he flashes as a pass rusher, oh my gosh. I mean, that is the guys the NFL wants. So that's my pick. I really like him. It's probably some North Carolina homerism, and I'm totally okay with that. So the second question we're going to talk about is the best wide receiver of the class. So we talked about how we missed on Higgins, but we got a few guys. It'd be nicer if they were compliments to Higgins, but as it stands now, we need those guys to flash in a couple years. Who's your favorite wide receiver in this class?
So I actually really like Princeton Fant. He's coming off the injury. He's not going to play this year. He's a blue shirt, but, great size. He got some raves in early practices. I like his ability. I thought he was underrated coming in the recruiting circles. I liked his film. He seems like a guy who can high point the ball and pull it down. I really like him. I think he's a guy who next year might step up and really show out. I think he's got a chance to be really good. And that's a little bit of a I don't want to say hot take, but a little bit underrated pick. But I really like his game. I think he's going to have a chance to be really good player here at Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take so much as just like an intentional, let's find someone who's a little bit lower at this position who could make a difference, because that's what the wide receivers are in this class. I picked Josh Palmer. We talked about it a little bit before the podcast. One of the best high school programs in the country. He has figured out how to use his body and catch TDs in high school. He had 8 touchdowns as a senior, which is huge. He's got really good size. Like, his wide, broad shoulders, long strider. He's 6'2". He's around 200 pounds. And then I think he could be not only this, but based on his tape, he really knows what he's doing in the red zone. He's just a big kid. And as long as the speed is there, I think he's one that could, I don't know if he'll flash this year or anything, but long term, he's the kind of receiver you want playing outside in this offense, I think.
Not sure how a guy at 6'2", 198, with what, well, I think he's got 4.4 speed.
Yeah, he's fast.
At St. Thomas Aquinas High School, one of the top premier high school football factories in the country, doesn't get higher ranked than, you know, I don't think he's, you know, a top 500 guy by anybody.
No, I mean, he was way low on the wide receiver rankings, and maybe the only thing I could think of when I watched this film, because a lot of it is he's really good at getting off bump and run coverage, and then he just goes up and gets the ball, which, I mean, it's not like that's a bad thing. He might not have as much straight line speed so much as being a long strider, but, I mean, that's kind of how Josh Malone was, and that turned out pretty good in this offense.
I mean, yeah, I mean, and he's going to be in the two deep this year, and everyone – is talking about how good he's looked and everything. I just think with him, I think there's definitely potential, and I kind of went with Fant too just to be a little different also. I think with Palmer, you know, the route running and everything he has to work on, and the speed definitely. But, I mean, I think Palmer and Fant are going to be pretty good. I'm not as convinced as much with Murphy and Jones, but either way, I think those two should be pretty solid wide receivers for Tennessee.
Yeah, I like the size on those guys, and you could see Palmer or Fant, if they just get – if their bodies just develop into 6'2", instead of 6'2", 220, 6'2", 205 and speed, I mean, that's ready to roll in this offense. And then I actually agree with you on Jordan Murphy. He's got a lot of hype, and everyone was so glad he got in, and I absolutely am too. I just don't know exactly where he fits. He's a little bit taller, but he's really small on his film, and – maybe he's a slot guy. Maybe he's similar to Bird. But I'm just in wait and see mode with him. I watched the film. He's got a little bit of twitch, but he doesn't do one thing incredibly well. But a lot of people that follow recruiting pretty closely were really high on him and said that, like, if it weren't for grades, he might have been a little higher in the rankings. So you just have to sit back and hope with him. But he just seems a little bit small right now, and I'm really enjoying looking at the film of these monstrous guys like Fant and Palmer who look like they are ready size-wise right now. So thinking about the freshmen, thinking about how we need someone to flash, someone to pop, who do you think surprises as a freshman? So we talked about our picks to be the best at certain positions. We talked about the best overall pro prospect. Who are the kind of the lower ranked guys or someone who you think ends up on the depth chart later that surprises our fan base as a freshman?
You know, I think Will Ignott's going to be in the two deep at the end of the year. I really do. You know, he's a 4-star guy, so it isn't like too much of a surprise, but I think maybe I'm just read it wrong, but when he committed, I don't think the excitement was there because he committed to two other schools. He talked about how he really wanted a certain offer. I think it was from Alabama. He was looking for that offer and never really got it. But, you know, he's committed. He's been committed to Tennessee for a while. He signed with us. You know, he looks really good. 6'2", 230, inside linebacker. I don't know if he's going to be necessarily an inside linebacker here, but I think he could definitely be in the two deep at strong side. And I really think he's going to be a special teams ace.
Yeah, he's another guy who the perfect size for a linebacker in this defense. Who knows what it is this year, but those are the kind of guys that you need in every class because they're going to flash eventually. My pick is actually Ty Chandler. So when we talked last week, you talked about how you expect Kelly to have a monster year, and I think a lot of that is how good he is, but a lot of that is you think he's going to get a vast majority of the workload. One of my main differences is that I think he's going to get a little bit less of the workload because I think Chandler's going to be pretty good. So he's already going up a little bit. I think Kelly is such a patient, good runner, and Chandler is more, he's a little bit smaller and he's incredibly fast. I actually think that could be a really nice compliment. So it's not exactly a shock to pick the near 5-star running back who's already in the two deep, but we're going to need somebody to carry the ball behind Kelly. As good as Kelly is, we have a good O-line. Chandler's incredibly fast. Maybe he is the guy who can break these long runs that we yearned for so long. I think he's a really nice compliment to the way Kelly runs. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people because I think he's going to get a little bit more carries than we're thinking right now.
It's definitely possible. I think Chandler's definitely going to be be the backup. I think he's going to see some carries. He might maybe get a chance at punt return. You never know. That might be a possibility, too, although I'm all in favor of Marquez Callaway being there.
Yeah, I think we have Callaway as the guy who's likely to be there, but Chandler, he's sort of pure speed, and he had huge numbers in high school. I think it just makes a lot of sense that he ends up with just a couple big plays or just steady, 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 and that's all we need from that backup, because I agree with you that Kelly's going to be incredibly efficient. Kind of the last quick twitch question, kind of a fun one. We had a lot of entertaining or unusual, just generally awesome, fun names in this class. What's your favorite name of a player in this recruiting class?
Yeah, I like Cheyenne LaBruzza. That sounds like somebody who should hit people hard. I think that's like a fantastic name. Shout out to his parents for naming him that. I like Will Ignat too. That's kind of a different one. And then I like Theo Jackson because that sounds like a fantastic 1970s detective.
I went with Latrell Bumpus. I think that's awesome. I like the name Kevon. And then one that I found when I was kind of prepping for the podcast that they're on a little bit different levels athletically right now, but Josh Palmer, despite going to St. Thomas Aquinas, and this could maybe explain some of why he was a little bit lower in the rankings. He was only at St. Thomas Aquinas later in his career. He's actually from Canada. And because he's from Canada, he's a little bit bigger and he can jump out of the gym to catch touchdowns. He earned the name Air Canada while he was in high school. So every video I saw was like hashtag Air Canada, all about Josh Palmer. And I was like, you know what? I'm on board with that. I want him to play because I want to start saying that immediately. So as far as nicknames go, it's going to be interesting to see if others come out through the season, because I think like Trey Smith and those guys are pretty vocal. But right now, he's the leader in the clubhouse with the best nickname on the team, I think.
Yeah, that's, you can't really go wrong with Air Canada. Anytime you can be named after Toronto Raptors Vince Carter, that's not, I mean, you definitely, you've got to live up to something there. I think that's, I like Brent Samaglia too. I think that's yes. Like a cool kicker name there. And, you know, shout out to the kickers. So, I mean, figured I'd throw that out there. And then, doesn't Will McBride sound like the ultimate Texas quarterback?
It really does.
Like, When I saw he had committed and his name was Will McBride and he was from Texas, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense there. And I don't want to stereotype, but it definitely sounds like the slightly undersized mobile quarterback, Will McBride, like Johnny Manziel and everything. Yeah, I could definitely see that there.
Another thing that I want to put on everyone's radar, and we have to think about it before the season, I don't know if John Kelly needs a nickname or not, and I don't want to force it. John Kelly is a really cool name, but he's going to be a superstar, and I think it might be cool to think about what nickname fits for him.
So I've been calling him the Joker because his initials are JK.
Right.
Like I just thought, I think I mentioned that to you once. I think that's a great nickname. You know, obviously the Batman villain, the Joker.
Right.
Like, you know, he, you know, makes people miss and everything. I think that's what I kind of call him, me and my dad call him.
That would be awesome if that caught on, because John Kelly is simultaneously, like, it's one of those names where you almost have to say the full name every time. Like, you can't just say Kelly, but it's almost like he warrants a nickname because he's going to carry the load this year, and I think he's going to be really good.
Well, and then Juwan Jennings is just dog. I mean, that's the way that everyone calls him on Twitter. He's just a dog, so and, you know, he had that great Hail Mary against there. What was Kongbo's nickname? Didn't he have a nickname coming out?
King
Kongbo or something like
King
that?
King Kongbo, I think, was his whatever Instagram or whatever feed. And I think that kind of sticks and kind of makes sense.
So, I mean, that's pretty cool, too. And then I like Khalil McKenzie's full name. I kind of wish he went by that, like, full time.
I think he might now.
I think technically it is. It's Reginald. I mean, on the roster, it's under Reginald McKenzie Jr., which that's just a fantastic name.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm excited about this recruiting class, getting back into it. We have the absolute jewel of the class in Trey Smith. And then I love that Chandler's going to have a role early. I hope we can get some guys to impact the defensive line. And then we don't need them right away, but we have some decent receivers that we can track their progress. That's going to be all for this week. We're going to come back next week with So we're going to be recording the other conference previews that we haven't gotten to yet, and we're going to be recording our draft. So what we're going to do for the draft this year is we're going to do the same thing we did last year, but we're going to pretend that we're GMs of an NFL team. And then at the end of the season, after we've seen everyone perform, after we know who is in the award races, we saw the big years, we're going to have the opportunity to revisit the draft and pick replacement players, basically. So we're going to do a second draft. You keep who you want, but if someone flashed this year and you want them on your team, we'll have the opportunity to do that. And we're just going to track these teams for a while. So we're going to act as like competing GMs. We're going to do the same draft as last year. And that's how we're going to – that and the conference previews will get us familiar with everything heading into the conference or heading into the opening weekend.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited here about what it's going to be like going in and whatnot. It's going to be interesting to kind of see what it's going to turn into and everything. I think it will be – the most interesting part is what we're going to do is on Sunday we're going to go ahead and do the Georgia Tech – preview Sunday morning before the game, and then we'll release it for y'all.
Yeah, so we've got a few that are going to be in the shoot starting in the next couple weeks. I think the most interesting thing about the draft this year is that last year I think there were a lot of obvious picks, like Deshaun, Fournette, McCaffrey, Mike Williams. Like, it was sort of lined up for us. I think we're going to have to dig a little bit more this year, and I think there's going to be a little bit more discussion this year because we talked last week off air about there are a lot of voids to fill. So there are a lot of guys who went to the league. You know, Christian McCaffrey's gone. Dalvin Cook's gone. Leonard Fournette's gone. Deshaun Watson, who was so good for so long, is gone. So there are voids to fill. That draft is what's going to do it. And then we're only a couple weeks away from one of the best opening weekends and followed by great Sunday games, followed by Tennessee on Monday. So it's about to get cranked up. Thank you guys for listening. We'll come back next week with more. We're going to have multiple episodes rolling out, and then we're going to be ready for the college football season heading into the next weekend. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.